You guys are still alive?
Yeah!
Holy sh!
The average person touches their face 2,000 or 3,000 times a day. 3 to 5 times every waking minute.
You gotta isolate the sick, and I mean really isolate them. We gotta get everybody else back into the houses. We gotta keep them there.
We're doing that.
No, we're not doing it! And if one of them has got it, that 10 of them have got it.
What does it mean?
Judy, what does it mean?
They're checking for elevated temperatures. It's gotta be some kind of virus.
Time to nut up or shut up.
Hello and welcome to Apocalyptic, a movie review podcast for apocalyptic films. We are recording on November 2nd, 2020. We have a special guest with us here today. Our son Clark is joining Cammie and I here.
Once we dive in, he won't be.
Who else do I have here? We got Andrew.
Hello.
And Chris.
Yeah, Jamesh.
All right. I think that's the reveal right there of what film we're going to be doing our podcast on today. The film is titled Borat Subsequent Movie Film Delivery of Prodigious Bride to American Regime for Make Benefit One's Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. So that's, I've got the synopsis out of the way now too, because that was pretty much a synopsis of the film. But before we move further, I want to throw it out to Andrew to see if we have any shout outs for the podcast today.
Yeah. So we, I'm not going to say his name because it is his first and last name, but we'll just say Michael reached out and gave us a comment on one of our movie posters. So this specifically was episode 14, Children of Men. He gave us a comment saying, yes, was hoping you'd do this one. So if you haven't heard the Children of Men episode, stop what you're doing. Well, actually, no, listen to this podcast and then then listen to the Children of Men one. But yes, thank you, Michael, for being a part of our community and the especially the Instagram one.
So yes, and us, so a reminder to everyone, please, yeah, please comment, subscribe,
follow.
Yeah, all those things. Chris, let's go over to you for the fun part. I say that and I realize that's just terrible. For the most,
we'll take that again.
Let's the most not fun part of this. So Chris, give us the COVID case count numbers. And it's been a while since we've recorded, so
It's been a while, and that makes the changes that much more dramatic and awful. Because the last time we calculated this, it was September 22nd, and so as of today, the 2nd of November, the U.S. has 9,567,000 cases. The deaths is currently sitting at 236,997, and number of recoveries is 6,171,000. So in the past 40 days, we've seen an increase in 2.5 million cases, 31,500 deaths, and 1.8 million recoveries, which I'm just, when I look back at just the start, our first podcast and how long it took to get to, you know, 100,000 deaths, it took, you know, forever. And we're able to just jump up pretty quickly now, certainly a lot faster. And it looks like we're also getting closer to 100,000 cases a day, almost. So we don't seem to be rounding any curve or going down a mountain at this point, but I'm no epidemiologist, so don't take my word for it.
I want this shit to end, man.
I think it means we're going to be doing this podcast for a little while, guys.
That's honestly job security, sort of. Not job
you mean
security.
Hobby security.
Hobby security, yeah.
What are you talking about? We get paid so many dollars for this.
Monopoly money.
Hey, wait, you're getting dollars for this?
Oh, shit.
Not Bitcoin?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's huge with the Bitcoins.
Terrifying. It's like 3% of the population now has essentially had COVID. Like 9 million? Like, that's like getting close. 3%, right?
Yeah. Okay.
That's
heading nice. Towards that herd mentality.
Well, let's move on from that and figure out what have you guys been up to for the last little while in your respective quarantines. Let's start with you, Andrew.
there a lot has happened since we've last recorded. I had a run in with the Proud Boys, so that was an interesting time. That's a bit of a long story. But I think most recently, actually, I even talked to you guys about this. Last minute, I got an opportunity to go see Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Stevie Wonder in Detroit. Nice. So me and some of my friends here just booked it up to Detroit and got to see them speak. I got to hear live music for the first time in a long time, and it just so happened to be Stevie Wonder. So that was insane. But you know, it's I've been following, as we all have, we've all been kind of following this election, and it's pretty incredible just to see like someone that I like I'm very excited for this election to be over, but to like actually see Joe Biden in person and actually hear him speak, and he's very coherent. Shouldn't be any questions about that.
People were there.
Well, so it was a car rally. So it was probably about.
Thank you for contextualizing that, because I was like, "Holy sorry. Moly, what the hell?" Yeah, did it was, you go
it was,
to?
Yeah, it was a car. Sorry, it was a car rally. I mean, with that said, people were out of their cars, but everyone was. It was really an interesting environment because people were being very conscious of, you know, distance and everything. Obviously, wearing masks. There were no chin diapers. But it was it was just an amazing experience, and there's gonna be a video.
Sense that diaper remark.
He didn't like that diaper. That's a shout out to South Park. That's a line that I've now stolen from South Park. But anyway, it was an incredible experience, and I'm so ready for this election to be over. And if you're listening to this on election day and you haven't voted, fucking vote. Listen to this podcast while you're waiting to go vote.
Especially if you live in Arizona, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, or Arizona.
Yep. Exactly. And I happen to be wearing this shirt. If you vote this way, that would be cool. If you vote the other way,
it's good to vote. Bad,
but it, no matter what, it's good
to vote. Yeah, yeah, that's true. I think we can all encourage that for sure. Well, thank you, Andrew, for your...
Yeah,
it's an attempt to be on Andrew's part
slightly. I'm leaning in a particular way.
Okay, gotcha. I wasn't sure like if you were still a little undecided, so thank you for clarifying, appreciate it. I'll go next. Let's see what has happened. Yeah, like Andrew said, we're all kind of just, this election's coming up, and you know, it's gonna be interesting, to say the least.
And yeah, did we specify what, like, we're recording the day, like, on election day eve?
Yeah, I would call this our, like, election special.
Yeah.
Even though it's not really the crux of the episode. The movie Borat, subsequent movie film, is the actual, you know, obviously the subject of this podcast. Let's see. I'm trying to even, like, so I've been on bonding leave with my son, which has been great. I haven't been working, which is probably why my beard is so, you know, luscious and large. Which has been kind of a nice break, I like, frankly.
The curls.
Yeah, yeah. Just being at home and being very grateful and thankful that I get to, you know, spend a lot of time with Clark. In a couple of weeks, I'll be going back to work, but this has been fun. Not as many housing projects recently, though, so it's been pretty relaxed, frankly. Just a lot of like cleaning constantly. Frankly, that's pretty much my life. So that continues. Yeah, honestly, it's not really that exciting of an update, frankly.
But you sound very happy. It's like
I'm stoked. Welcome back. I've been enjoying. Yeah. It's like a sort of like a vacation, frankly. I've been enjoying myself. So yeah, that's absolutely true. And next up, Cammy, what's been going on with you?
So I'm gonna take Halloween because Jeff forgot we celebrated it together. But we had a really great one. We actually, Petco Park had a one-way pumpkin trail, and oh, cool. It's great because they sold essentially times when you could go, so they could really limit the amount of people that were there, and like everybody had to like
wear masks, and they even had like a big call out that like you had to wear it over your mouth and your nose or you'd get like kicked out essentially, which I really appreciated that they're really hammering home like proper mask use. And it was nice just to have like a normal-ish family event that we could all enjoy and partake in. And we put Clark in his little baby giraffe costume.
That was so cute.
Yeah, we really enjoyed that. Just to be able to be outside of the house and know that like nobody else was gonna, you know, be all up in our business was really nice. They did a really good job of just organizing it and ensuring that like everybody felt safe. As a bonus, we got some Halloween candy that we were not expecting. So that was nice.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what's going on with you?
Well, Jeff mentioned that you guys aren't participating in too many house improvement projects, but that's okay because we are trying to fill that quota. We still haven't started construction yet, but I think we're almost done with the demolition of the kitchen, the living room, the guest bathroom, Astrid's room, and our room. We have new appliances coming, which is pretty bitchin', finally. All credit goes to Anna because I had nothing to do with any of those decisions, which is probably for the best because I don't have the best taste. So we've kind of been doing that and still doing a new job. So kind of getting more used to the pace of that and the tempo and the long hours. But that's still very rewarding, albeit stressful a lot of times, but in a way that I think is good. Let's see what else. I don't know. I bought a couple of new firearms just cause, you know, no reason, just, I guess.
Preparing for the Civil War.
just better to have them and not need them, I suppose. So yeah. Unfortunately, one of them doesn't get here until 11 days after the election. So I'm hoping that if there is in fact a Civil War, it's a nice slow moving molasses type versus an overnight, zombie movie type.
This is so fucked up that this is even like a conversation.
Yeah. What's like 70% of like the US population supposedly is like worried about unrest after the election or like that?
It's gonna be bad either way, no matter what.
I mean, in cities they're already boarding up spots.
Yeah. They're not messing around, man.
Yeah.
So, okay, I have a question for you guys. Are you guys going to be, this is completely off topic, but it's part of the podcast, I suppose. Are you guys going to be watching tomorrow, or are you guys going to kind of like not watch news for the day or the evening and just wait till the next morning to see if there's anything? Or are you going to be like glued to the TV?
I'm going to be glued.
I won't be because I'm working. So I'll probably catch it in spurts throughout the day, but I don't expect to have my my finger on the pulse, which is probably for the best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was actually in a play during one of the presidential election. Like we were literally performing. And so every time I was off stage, we'd go to the computer lab to see what was going on. I'm pretty sure that was the Bush Gore election. That's just a weird memory though. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for my job, I sit in front of a computer for 8 hours. So I can have it, the news just running the entire time. And I unfortunately have no self control, so that'll just be on the screen all day. So
that seems unhealthy. I think we're gonna watch Forgetting Sarah Marshall tomorrow just to get some comedy.
that's a good movie. I haven't seen that in a bit.
All right, Andrew, should we go ahead? Well, Andrew and Chris, should we go ahead and play this trailer for Borat's subsequent movie film?
Ago, I released movie film which brought great shame to Kazakhstan. But now I was instructed to return to Yankee Land to carry out secret mission.
I go to America!
Borat! What do you say? No, it's not me.
Borat, come back!
People may recognize my face. I would need disguises.
This man is a sex criminal?
No, not sex friendly. big, big.
I will take this to be a fat like American man.
Yeah, this is a good one. Where is his crumb? What is problem, officer?
Got somebody that's strapped to the top of your car. He needs in that passenger seat, boss.
Only men and bears are allowed inside car.
I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
I need a dress with real sexy peels.
This is a bag that just goes over the dress.
They're nice.
I really like this.
Let us present Sandra Jessica Parker Drummond.
I want this one with the baby on it. I have a baby inside me.
Can you take it out?
No, we cannot. That's not what we do here.
I feel bad because I was the one who put the baby in her. Did you ever put one in your daughter?
No, I did not.
Where is everybody?
They're wanting everybody to quarantine so they don't spread this virus.
Could I stay in your home?
I hope quarantine never ends.
What is more dangerous, this virus or the Democrat?
Democrats.
What's up? Killing some of the virus.
No, you can't see the virus.
No, it's still there.
If you think you see a virus go like that.
This makes the virus sleepy. And then when it's sleeping.
Your daddy has a lot to learn.
My daddy is the smartest person in the whole flat world.
While the risk of coronavirus remains low, as the president said yesterday, we're ready for anything.
Michael Penis, I brought the girl for you.
Borat's subsequent movie film.
You fist me. Right. Now I fist you?
All right, there you
what
go.
Do you prefer? You fist me or I fist you?
Same time.
Fist each other.
There, right? You, go. There you go.
It always surprised me how much of that trailer is not in the film.
Because yeah, I really appreciate that too. Because we'll get into this. I was so excited to see this movie. And even like, and after watching that trailer, I'm even more stoked that like, it didn't take really seeing any of the footage for the most part for me to get excited for this movie. And anyway, I'm excited to talk about this one.
All right. So the synopsis of this film, besides being in the actual like movie title, it's essentially that Borat, who you may or may not know from a previous film titled Borat, is a Kazakh journalist, and he must deliver a bribe to a member of the U.S. government to earn his freedom. That's pretty much the film in a nutshell, I suppose. This wasn't released in theaters, so there isn't any box office information technically. What did you say, Andrew, that there's a view count or Amazon many people?
We were talking a little bit about this before recording, but Amazon said that there were over 10 million views over the weekend that it was released. You know, that's, we got to take Amazon at its word there.
I have no context. I don't know if that's good or bad for a release of a film on a streaming platform. Mm-hmm. Like, I literally have no context for that.
Well, how much does Amazon Prime cost?
Right, it's $100 a year.
Yeah, so let's just assume that, I mean, it's rough math, but if each one of those people that watched it is an Amazon Prime member, but I guess they didn't buy it just for the movie, so it's hard to say.
It'd be hard to make that, aren't you?
I'm trying to think of some way. If you have a better one, I'm all ears here.
I mean, no.
It may have encouraged some people to get Prime,
the trial, at least.
Yeah. Honestly, I know we're going to talk about it later, but I think what might have been the most successful marketing for it was the controversy, quote unquote, and we'll talk about this, I think, with Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
I think that little viral thing probably the interested people that normally probably wouldn't want to see a Borat movie because they were like, I want to see Rudy Giuliani doing some crazy, creepy shit.
Yeah.
And Sacha Baron Cohen was very tight-lipped on, you know, during his press interviews saying like, I don't want to comment necessarily
judge
on what took place, like go watch the movie and judge it for yourself. And that's just pushing the movie, if frankly, like that's,
yeah,
makes sense. Why wouldn't he? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you do it any other way? Why would you be like, yeah, it's totally incriminating or it's totally normal. You say, no, go watch the film and you'll mic up your own opinion.
Mike.
Mike.
So we're going to do this podcast slightly differently, right? We're not going to go through sort of beat by beat of the film. We kind of chose a few scenes, or, you know, five or six scenes that we kind of wanted to comment on that were some of the more outlandish. We got a little background, I guess. Like, Borat's in the U.S. He's supposed to deliver a bribe. It was supposed to be a monkey, but his daughter hid in the crate with the monkey and ate
this monkey. This monkey also happens to be the porn star, like the head porn star, apparently, in Kazakhstan.
To be fair, I think we should take his daughter at her word. The monkey ate itself.
Ah, true. Tutar. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so, yeah.
Her name was Tuta, not the monkey.
Tuta. Okay. No, not the monkey. Is it Tuta? The R is like slightly silent. And so she's now
slightly silent.
Well, it could be quiet.
Slightly silent.
It's just something being quiet, of course. So at this point, she is the bribe to be delivered. Mm-hmm. So he cannot be, I guess, in the gulags or, you know, be in prison anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's always this fear of being execute.
Ah, yes.
So that usually is the driving force. Actually, I do kind of, I think we should maybe speak to this change here, because what's so funny, and this is a theme that happens throughout the film, is that the title of the movie changes like probably three times. And so basically the initial prize, like Jeff said, was gifting this monkey to Mike Pence. But then as a way to communicate with Kazakhstan government, Borat goes into a
coffee shop.
Well, no, he goes into what's called the PMS store, which is like, I don't know, public mailing service or something like that. Anyway, he uses this guy in the store to just communicate back and forth via fax.
I need to make a contact with my premier, Nazarbayev. I must inform him of some news.
Okay, what do you want to say?
Sup, S-U-P.
That it? Oh. Okay. He sent you back, he said S-U-P with a question mark after it. Sup?
Ah, can you answer him? Chilling.
C-H-I-L-L-I.
Anyway, while this is happening, he looks at a TV screen that shows Donald Trump. He's in a predicament. He needs to like give a gift ultimately to Mike Pence. So he sees Donald Trump with Jeffrey Epstein living it up with the ladies, and that kind of like clues him into like, oh, I could give my daughter away.
Yeah, young ladies specifically, I suppose.
Young ladies, yeah. Anyway, and
so what? We want to do five scenes, right? So what are, do we want to break down what they are or just go through them?
I mean, yeah. Actually, Cammy, do you want to talk about the debutante ball? No. Okay, that's fine. I guess the reason why I thought the debutante ball was kind of interesting, because I thought it was kind of nice in some respects, because it sort of showed more the relationship between Tuta and Borat, and kind of like, I liked how the fertility dance kind of began. Obviously, because
not how it ended.
particularly, but I want to comment before we talk about that. One second before we talk about the dance, maybe. I think my favorite moment in this scene was Borat asks one of the gentlemen at the ball, like, "How much do you think my daughter's worth?"
Yep.
And he answers like $500. And I guess his daughter is standing next to him and just says to him, "That's fucking disgusting."
How much you think my daughter is worth?
$500.
Ooh, thank you. You my best friend, buddy.
That's all fucking I want. Right.
And it's so wonderfully real. I'm like, it's so gross. This guy is so gross.
Having, it's one thing that he said that fucked up thing, but getting that reaction from that daughter was gold.
Oh man,
it's so satisfying, because like that is the proper reaction to have.
I like clap for it. I was like,
yeah.
It's so bad. Oh
yeah, what's
it's a little embarrassing. He kind of lowballed him, to be honest.
A little bit, I suppose, but that's not the point.
That's not the point. That's so gross. You know what's there's a common theme, especially with Tutar's story, where appearance and like what it means to be like female in America, it comes through. And one of the other comments that's disgusting is the very first guy that Borat runs into that debutante ball, where I don't know if this guy's drunk or maybe he's just, I don't know, a little out of it, but he like just looks at his daughter and he's just like, that's what we like in the South, pretty girls. And it's just gross.
It's like the whole debutante ball thing feels like a very dated tradition, but yeah. I've just never lived in a place with a debutante ball either. Like I have no, yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, I had no context around it.
I don't like it, but
I will say that, like, I don't know, this scene in particular, it felt kind of like shooting fish in a barrel, like, you know, it's easy pickings. I kind of struggle with Borat a little bit because, like, the first movie was so much about exposing what people really think by, you know, like playing towards the type. With this movie, it's a little bit less funny. It's a little bit sad. I don't know, for me in particular, I just like we know this demographic and how they feel about women. Like, what was he expecting them to do?
It's an interesting, when you compare it to the first film, it felt like the first film was almost like uncovering sort of this racist underbelly, but now we're in this environment that it's not really hidden anymore. Like, these opinions, like what he said would be completely acceptable to everyone in that room until there's a camera that's actually pointing at it. But yeah. So that's interesting that you kind of were coming from that perspective.
Yeah, that. And like the whole fertility dance thing, I was just like, oh yeah, shocking. People are uncomfortable with, like,
yeah,
a woman's biology. Like we have, like, I don't know, feminine product commercials that use blue liquid. Like, we know people are uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. My dad watched this movie and had to stop at that scene. He couldn't handle it. And then he watched the later Giuliani scene separately, because that's really what he was there for.
That's so you, an example.
Yeah.
Anyway. So
not a fan of the dance, Cammy?
No, that's the thing. Is that, like, it's not the dance itself. It's just more like what it's trying to expose. It's kind of like, we know this, like. It's not really that surprising. And, like, honestly, my favorite part were the people who continue to clap on beat for the dance. Like, those people are my people. They're just like, yeah, keep it going. Yeah. They just, like, they didn't care what cost that part, that good time came at.
Ugh. Yeah, it was, if you haven't seen it, it's very graphic. And that's like blood, guys. Underselling it. Well, ultimately it is, but like, it's not something you see every day. But
I don't know. Any ladies who are listening to this are just going to be like rolling their eyes, like, yeah.
Yeah.
it's the fellas that are going to be like shocked and awed and like, yeah, once a month. Guess what? This is a really real reality.
Yeah. And what do they call it? It was like the blood moon or something like that.
I don't know. It's one of those euphemisms that get thrown around.
Yeah. Well, anyway, debutante scene. little wild.
Check.
Now, the original goal of this movie was to, and it changes throughout the film, but was to ultimately get, now in this case, Tutar to Mike Pence. And so that happens at a CPAC conference.
Well, so CPAC is basically an annual event, a conservative event that happens every year. And it's the Conservative Political Action Conference. And it's, I think it was started by a guy named Matt Schlapp, who is he's a Republican consultant. And I think his wife, Mercedes Schlapp, works in the Trump White House. So this is very much it's a big deal in conservative circles. And basically, the goal is that Pence is the keynote speaker, I think. Because I don't know if Trump spoke at this one, but Pence is one of the important ones. And so Borat shows up, and then he wants to disguise himself so he can fit in. So he walks in dressed as a member of the KKK. And he gets a lot of looks, but he successfully gets into a bathroom, and then
no one stops him.
There's a line.
Nobody stops him. Nobody.
There's a line, and he says, "Like, don't worry, I'm looking for Stephen Miller."
I think I'm Stephen Miller.
Or I'm Stephen Miller, something like that.
One of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so nobody seems to stop him. But I wonder if that's just one of those things where it's so strange. Nobody, like, I don't know if anybody would stop him. It's just one of those. I mean, I don't know. If I saw someone like that at a hockey game, I'd just be like, that's fucking weird. And then
you think there'd be like passes. It'd be like Comic-Con, right? Where you need like a pass to get in or something.
Yeah. But the same thing goes on later when he goes after Giuliani. I don't know how the hell he gets. There's some movie magic.
It's
I
a
think.
Fair question.
Sacha Baron Cohen apparently was like in that bathroom stall for 5 hours waiting for the moment to like actually go into the conference.
No. Commitment. So,
yeah, this guy commits. And I think it was ultimately a way to get into a position before Secret Service set up.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then ultimately when Mike Pence was on stage, he's like, gets a text or whatever and then goes.
I would say that that's unlikely. I mean, I've covered an event for the vice president when I was deployed. And that stuff happens days before he's there. And so the idea that he was there before Secret Service is that's there's no way that's true. It's
okay. Well,
there would have been two platoons worth of guys, not Secret Service guys. There would have been tactical guys throughout that building, you know, the day before, all the Secret Service EOD guys. Yeah. He didn't slip past the advance team for Pence. There's no way. But still, 5 hours in a bathroom dressed as Donald Trump, that's still commitment. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm. His boldness is just very impressive. Like, that's it's kind insane. Of the whole joy in many respects, is the guy is just willing to be uber bold. Like, to rush into, you know, essentially a CPAC meeting when the vice president's speaking and yell, "Hey, I have your girl."
Yeah.
Like, come on. That takes some serious, serious guts.
It's so crazy because so apparently when that happened at the time, it was reported that there was some guy dressed as Trump, but no one knew it was for this movie or anything.
Yeah.
What stood out to me in that scene, actually, was it's a very small moment, but after he's announced his daughter to Mike Pence in that crowded room, there's a woman that stands up behind him and like sucker punches him in the back. And there's a moment where I wouldn't say Sacha Baron Cohen like breaks character, but he like very sternly says, "Don't punch me," and it's real. It's very quick. You could easily miss it.
Yeah,
but it felt like something where he was just like, "I have to do this scene, but that's not fucking cool." And there's video evidence of assault. Yeah, I guess you can.
I imagine he. He flirts with danger a few times in this movie, clearly. And that seems to be a part of what he's risking, frankly, when he does these. And so essentially he's do you think he was arrested or just escorted out?
Probably just escorted out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a little less exposure and whatnot. And for all we know, maybe at some point he was like, "I'm Sacha Baron Cohen," and they're like, "Oh, let's not arrest you because it'll become a much larger thing."
Yeah, that'll be added to the movie.
Yeah. Well, what I thought was very surreal was that that CPAC happened late February, and this was obviously right kind of at not the beginning of the pandemic, but just it was not widespread in terms of like everyone being, you know, prepared for it, and you've got just this giant space with nobody with masks. And I guess it turned out that there were some exposures, and that some of the guys that Yeah, at CPAC. So they had, at least from what I'm reading, Ted Cruz, Matt Gaetz, Doug Collins, and Mark Meadows all had direct contact with some unnamed carrier that had tested positive.
During CPAC? So, but they didn't get it at CPAC. That point in time.
No, they didn't get it at that point, but just the fact that, like, this was an event that in hindsight seems risky and silly because unbeknownst to, you know, probably a lot of the people in the crowd, or at least, you know, they ignored it, you know, it was starting.
Oh yeah. Well, that's why they cut in the bit where Mike Pence talks about there's only 15 cases and
hilarious.
We have it under control.
And from even like, maybe we'll dive in this more in the review, but like from like a sort of a plot standpoint, like it's almost like this plot device, like kind of like alluding to what's going to come later in the story. It's really well placed, sort of like 20, 30 minutes into the film that then takes a turn later.
And it's important to just remind viewers of that bullshit, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, that is definitely an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Babysitter.
So they fail. They don't get, you know, to talk to Mike Pence. So they decide Rudy Giuliani is the next bet. Because that will be another powerful figure, right? That's the.
I think it would be worth, in terms of like the tone of this movie, talking about the babysitter and the Jewish ladies.
Yeah.
So the babysitter is a really interesting addition to this film. So after CPAC, ultimately, as Jeff, you just said, it's later decided that they should attempt to give Tutar off to another one of Trump's friends. And there's a great scene of her going through a phone showing all of like Trump's
prison, yeah. Indicted.
D. Michael arrested. Flynn, yeah, Paul Manafort. So funny.
At this point, they need to do a makeover on Tutar beyond just some makeup and hair. They're going to do...
Because Rudy loves boobs, big boobs.
Plastic surgery. There's one moment I did think was pretty damn funny with the plastic surgeon when Borat is able to get him to say titties like 4 or 5 times. And he's like, titties? 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 That just cracked us up.
I feel like any doctor that calls it a titty is like immediately like, all right, man, you can't be taken seriously.
Also, he got the doctor to admit that if Borat wasn't there, he'd want to have sex with her.
Yeah.
So strange.
And then if you like, what I would suggest is that maybe we place some breast implants.
And what do you mean breast?
The breast. Oh. Titty.
Titty?
Titty.
Titty?
Titty.
Titty?
Titty.
Titty.
Or breast.
I want a man who wants to make a sex attack on me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that would be most men.
Would you make a sex attack on me?
If your father was not here.
I wonder if it was like mentioned that she was 15.
Not yet. Well,
probably.
I don't know.
Maybe not, but.
Well, I mean, she mentioned to the babysitter, but I actually don't know if it was mentioned.
But it's also like, that's her dad. It's fucking weird, man. Like, there's no excuse for that. It's weird. But it comes down to like the actual plastic surgery is going to be extremely expensive. So they're put into a situation where they need to get a certain amount of money in order to have the surgery. So we are introduced to the babysitter because Borat's going to figure out how to make some money. So Tutar needs to hang out with a babysitter.
Janice Jones.
Okay.
Janice Jones, professional babysitter.
Yeah.
Well, she works at a local church, right? And she thinks she's a part of a documentary about women getting sold off to men, child brides.
Yeah. In order to get this stuff, they had to really kind of, I mean, straight up just lie to get their signatures. But yeah, I don't know too much about this necessarily, but I know she felt betrayed. And I think there's some promising legal action there.
she was told about the documentary and she did it. And then after the fact, she said that the performance was really convincing, but I don't think she had a lawsuit. She did get paid a small amount, but the priest or the pastor who runs the church, he started a GoFundMe to raise more money for her because she's been without a job since COVID. And she's honestly been like the heart of the community. And so it was like a goal of $100,000. People started donating it. I think it's passed. I'm not sure, but it's doing really well. But Sacha Baron Cohen actually donated $100,000 to her, which she routed directly to shelters in the area.
Oh, cool.
That's so cool. I mean, she and we haven't really delved into this too much, but like I find that this movie has a lot of heart, mainly because of Tutar, but also like the inclusion of the babysitter scenes. It's like she is an amazing voice and force in this movie. And so we're introduced to her with Borat dropping off his daughter and treating her as if she's a dog with like a clicker, gives her a treat when she sits. And you just see this like, obviously wonderful human being seeing this. And like, what I appreciate about her is that she's, I mean, trying to be respectful in the sense like, you know, this is a different person from culture. Coming from a different culture or whatever, but at the same time being like, I forget the exact things that she says, but it's just like, you're using like, that's a treat, like that you're giving her a treat. It's
she's
yeah.
essentially like a really good aunt. She just does a really good job of like not openly like criticizing the parenting style, but like on the side, she kind of corrects things for like put new perspectives for Tutar on, you know, things she might have conceived incorrectly. So like Tutar walks around with this manual that I guess they get from the where does this manual come from?
It's like it's given
agricultural center or something.
Yeah, that's like the who
the guide
makes
to daughters.
The manual. Yeah, so it's like given whenever a daughter is birthed or whatever.
So this guide is essentially a lot of misinformation to keep women submissive and suppressed. And one of the sections that Tutar shares with the babysitter is the story of what happens when you touch yourself. And it's this really graphic story of like your hand like gets bitten off and you get swallowed up into yourself until you turn into a ball.
Yeah.
And the babysitter kind of very gently tells her like, you know, I've touched myself and guess what? That didn't happen. Like, I'm still here. I'm not a ball. That's not going to happen to you. And she starts breaking down for Tutar. She doesn't realize Tutar's an actress, but she starts breaking down for her like, hey, not everything in here is true. You're father is lying to you. You're worth more than what he's telling you. And you don't have to do anything he's telling you to do. You like you're beautiful. You don't need to be doing all this.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead.
It's just so for a movie that like, I'm sure they have a loose idea of like what the goal of what they're trying to do in these scenes, but like, I wonder if they went into this thinking that they would have, like, she is just such a good addition. She had no idea that she was in this movie. And she brings so much, like, heart to the movie and these scenes. It's just, there are many moments in this film where I'm just like, it's shocking to me that this just happened as opposed to it being, like, staged.
What are you finna do?
I will get the surgery so my daddy can give me as a present for this American man.
What kind of surgery?
I will have the biggest titties in the whole world.
Okay, so you're getting plastic surgery at 15.
Yes.
When are you getting that done?
Now.
Now?
Yes.
Wow. Do you want that? Seriously. No, you don't, because you would have said yes.
Excite.
You excite, but that's not what you want. Okay, I don't think you need to do that, because you're pretty and you're young. And any man should like you as you are. You shouldn't want to be anybody else but yourself.
But if I have enormous titties, I don't have to learn how to swim.
Your titties would not keep you from drowning. You would still have to learn how to swim.
They will protect me?
How would they protect you? They titties.
I know that, like, the overall concept he starts working on long in advance, but he writes day to day.
Yeah.
Based on, like, what is happening to him. Like, we're going to go over this later in a later scene, but, like, when he's going deep undercover for 5 days straight, like, he's got a secret compartment where he's keeping his computer so at night he can write what's happening next.
Mm-hmm. We're left where Janice encourages her to, like, decide for herself if she ultimately wants to have the surgery. And it's so sweet because she's just like, okay, I'll think about it. And she's like, oh, that's all I want. That's all I want you to do is just to think about it. It's a nice little moment. But anyway, so throughout the film, there's kind of these comments made about how, like, women can't drive. And so Janice ultimately drives Tutar to where she would potentially get surgery. And then also through that, she's seeing other women driving. So she's, between the conversation she had with Janice and, you know, things that she's observing, she's, you know, questioning things. But she ends up going into a hotel, and I think it might be worth mentioning this scene at least, but I don't even know how to approach this scene. She enters a Republican or women's
meeting or something to that effect.
And or you go ahead.
She essentially finds herself. She tests out the babysitter's theory on the realities of the guide she was given to her. So she goes into the bathroom, touches herself. Nothing happens. But she essentially discovers how to pleasure
something
herself.
Happened.
Something happened, for sure.
Nothing bad happens.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But she's suddenly very empowered and a little bit too empowered for this woman's group. Because she goes into detail about how she discovered herself and men are wrong. And so, like, the Republican women are, you know, they're with her in the first half, but they lose her in the second. And she gets kind of quietly escorted out, which is when she finally confronts Borat about everything that she's discovered.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really upset about it. He doesn't like getting questioned by his daughter or getting told that the Holocaust didn't happen, which is something that she discovered when she looked it up on Facebook.
This manual is full of lies. I found a new book which only tells the truth. It's called Facebook. I learned so many facts there. Like our nation's proudest moment, the Holocaust, never happened.
How dare you say that?
Look.
So Borat, he's really upset about, like, finding out that Facebook has stated that the Holocaust didn't happen. And so he's really upset and he wants to commit suicide. And so the best way he knows how is to go to a synagogue so he can be there for the next shooting.
Which is like that. Oh, my God. That alone is fucked up. But he enters this synagogue looking like what he envisions a Jewish person is. And he's got if you haven't seen this, you should watch the movie, but he has a very long nose. He looks kind of like a demon. He's holding a bag of money and
he's holding a puppet that's holding a bag of money and with like a label, in case you didn't get it, media.
Yeah, media. So, you know, perfect disguise. And, but this scene is also so sweet.
It's very shockingly, sweet.
Shockingly.
So he comes in and there's two Holocaust survivors sitting in one of the, like, on two of the benches. And they, like, right away are just like, hi, like, who are you?
And then there's a moment where he says, like, nice weather we're controlling.
But these ladies, they see like exactly what he, you know, he thinks he's representing, and they call him over, and they, instead of just, you know, scolding him or getting mad at him, all they want to do is just say like, hey, like, see our noses? They don't look like the long nose that you're wearing. They look like your real nose. And like, here, let's hug it out. Like, let me give you a hug and you'll see, like, this is who we are, not like what you have in your brain about us.
You are Jewish?
Yes.
No, you are not Jewish. Listen, don't be afraid of me.
But please don't eat me alive.
Do I look like I eat people?
I'm
an old, good woman.
Yes.
Look at me. I'm Jewish. Do I have a long nose? Look at me.
No.
You can touch my nose.
What?
Look at me. You see, is it long?
No, it's a small one.
Exactly like your nose. Look at Doris. Does she have a long nose?
A little bit bigger than yours.
So we are normal, exactly like you.
Okay, then use your venom on me and finish me. I am very depressed.
Can I give you a hug? Don't.
Don't kill me.
I will not kill you. Let me give you a kiss. You see, I give you a kiss and you are still alive.
For now I am, but maybe the venom take longer.
Oh, come on, you will be okay.
It's such a sweet moment.
Yeah, and then there's a moment where he's just like, I'm hungry. And then it cuts to them like eating together. And she's like, so tell me your story. And Borat, of course, is just like, the story that I have to tell is probably the worst story that anyone's ever had to deal with. And, you know, so he's explaining the events of the film so far. And then she stops him and she's like, do you want to hear my story? And I was in the Holocaust. And then he's just like, but the Holocaust, Facebook said it wasn't real. And where it takes away the sweetness is the moment where you see Borat get excited that the Holocaust happened or being confirmed by it. But outside of that, even it's similar to the babysitter scenes. It's incredible the moments that they were able to capture, because it is so real and also just so heartwarming and kind of gives you hope, especially in these turbulent times. So
one of the old ladies, one of those Holocaust survivors, died shortly after that scene was shot, and they dedicated the whole movie to her.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aww.
So it's very sweet for many reasons.
All right. So then at this stage, so after he has learn that the Holocaust is real, he skips his way out of just skipping in his like stupid Jewish costume.
He goes to, he meets his new best friend.
Right. Okay.
So, empty streets.
Yeah. So it's shown that he's looking for Tutar, and COVID hits. So if someone wants to take that one, Chris, you love these guys.
Oh, they're great. It's so funny. And it also just remarkable because I'm trying to imagine a world in which someone invites a complete total stranger into their home like that. But yeah, so he basically meets these two guys. I don't know where they are, Oregon or Washington or somewhere on the West Coast. And basically he's walking the streets and the first person he comes to, he asks where everybody is. And I guess the guy tells him that everyone's quarantining because of the pandemic, and he says he has
to go. You have to imagine they had to ask a few people. Like, that wasn't like the first people they asked.
Yeah,
like,
sure, it probably wasn't.
They had to have.
Well, also, but, I mean, like, he's got a camera crew with him, so I'm sure it's like there's like a producer there. It's like, we'll give you a paycheck or something like that. And then,
yeah, who's to say? But he asks if he can come back to his house, and the guy agrees, and it's him and his buddy, which is also strange because at least one of them has a wedding ring, and I don't think they're married, but it seems like they spend a few days together. So I don't know where the wife is or what that's about. And they're just in this like log cabin hunting lodge that is just
a nice spot. Much, I liked it.
Very, yeah, but it's very much a right wing fever swamp. And it's it's great because that Borat starts asking about Hillary Clinton and Democrats eating children, and that's where my ears perked out, because this is one of my favorite little side hobbies, because I love to hear about QAnon stuff, because it is just the best stuff. And
that's so some ripe crazy right there. It's just like,
yeah, it's really,
in fact, it's refined, just very strong crazy.
Oh yeah, distilled to it, just an absolute potent little poison. And I'm so invested in it that I, in fact, do pay money to the QAnon Anonymous podcast. So shout out to one of my absolute favorite podcasts, because I give them money every month because they put out just the best, absolute batshit, unbelievably crazy content. And so it turns out that these two guys are firmly in the well, honestly, they're asking questions, quote unquote, about the likelihood.
But that's what QAnon is. All it is people asking questions. Hey, boy,
real. I mean, who knows? I don't know.
What is more dangerous, this virus or the Democrat?
Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the Democrats, with Obama, and I think it goes back to the Clintons when they were also in office.
This Clinton, they make this plague?
Yes.
Yes.
Not nice.
Clintons are very evil.
Extremely evil.
Supposedly they torture these kids. It gets their adrenaline flowing in their body. Mm-hmm. Then they take that out of their adrenal glands, and then they drink their blood or that out of their...
I've heard about things like that.
Hillary Clinton drink the blood of children?
That's what we've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard.
It's been said.
Yeah.
They're at least humoring the possibility that Hillary Clinton is torturing and murdering children for the adrenochrome in their blood or in their...
Getting them really excited, getting their adrenaline going, and then siphoning off the blood.
Yes, and that in fact keeps them young, except for the fact that it doesn't seem to be working on any of the old Democrats. They're all old, but they don't look that young. Beside the point.
True.
So he basically spends a few days with these guys and ends up recognizing that Tuta is now a reporter, and it looks like for a right-wing news organization. So he accompanies these two guys to a rally.
Wait, one real fast thing that I think we should mention, since they are so like in the conspiracy world, what is a great, and again, it's like he's writing as he's making this movie, there's a great moment where he then starts to talk about, you know, what it's like for childbirth in Kazakhstan, and then they look at the manual from Kazakhstan and they are like, no, this is a conspiracy theory. What you're saying is completely wrong. It doesn't make any sense. And it's just such a good, like, you know, that's
a great moment. Yeah.
Bullshit.
and that's
exposing that in their hypocrisy.
And specifically within QAnon, there's a great schism between the people that are firmly believe that JFK Jr. is still alive, that he didn't die in a plane crash, and that he was going to be Trump's running mate in the 2020 election. And then you have the other half of QAnon that's like, no, that's absolute craziness. Why would you bring that into – you're undermining the movement by thinking like that. And the complete lack of self-awareness is mind-boggling. It's a beautiful thing.
There's tears of QAnon, essentially, right? There's
– yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they go to the rally.
People involved.
Is that too? Yeah, somehow. Sure. And there's all kinds. It's a rabbit hole.
There's lots of different stuff just thrown together, and some people choose something. And
that's whatever. The beauty of it is you can somehow connect all kinds of different other conspiracy theories, but that's a whole different podcast. And anyway.
Yeah, this is going way beyond.
This is one of my favorite parts. Just that came up with those guys was one of my absolute favorite parts, because that's just such a funny thing. But they go to the rally, and it turns out that Tuta is there, and so, you know, obviously they're reunited.
Now, this rally I saw on YouTube, and this is where I got the first clue that there was, like, something that Sacha Baron Cohen was doing. And so this, I mean, not what was filmed, but there was cell phone footage that, you know, leaked sort of that Sacha Baron Cohen was up to something. But he basically, this is like a March for Our Lives rally. I think that's what. March for Our Rights.
It's rally. Olympia, Washington. So you were right, Chris. Washington is probably where these guys were.
Yeah. And so he somehow is able to get on stage of this event and starts to starts a song that goes.
Pretty catchy.
It's pretty catchy. Yeah. It's encouraging people to inject like Obama or Fauci with the Wuhan flu,
or cut them up like the Saudis do. Like yeah. That's the dark, that's some darkness right there, dude.
Oh man, it's so bad.
And it's there's so there's bad. One moment that's like, I think probably the scariest part in that scene. He says a line, gas him like the Nazis do or something like that. And you see a guy do the fucking
Nazi
Hitler thing. It's like, Jesus. And well, not to mention, this rally is open carry, so there's guns everywhere as well.
And I know that Sacha Baron Cohen showed some footage on Colbert, I think, so at some point, I'll tell the story of this. So I guess there were some counter protesters that were around who someone recognized Sacha Baron Cohen, and it kind of got around. And so once the sort of people that were there for the rally itself, some realized that this was kind of a stunt was essentially taking place, and they took over the stage, and some guy, I guess, was reaching for his pistol, and one of Sacha Baron Cohen's security guards like put his hand on the guy's arm and said, you don't want to do that. And essentially was able to stop.
Because he paid for the security at that event.
it's interesting. So he was able to kind of get away, but there was some real tension there. And they showed a video of inside an ambulance where Sacha Baron Cohen had gotten into to leave. And they were trying to open the door and get to him in this ambulance. And it was a footage from inside the ambulance, and Sacha Baron Cohen's holding the door of the ambulance. It's pretty gnarly. Like
at this stage, he's broken character. He's like, drive, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, he's like, drive. Yeah. Like, it's pretty gnarly for sure. Yeah, it goes to show that the scene later on where the two guys who he stayed with kind of talked to him about meeting Tutar and letting him know what she's doing, you know, that was filmed later on, I imagine. A different time and place, potentially.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, they even like the end of that scene is sort of the beginning of when the people start getting outraged. So you see him like, thank you very much. And he like dips out. And then they cut to the end of that scene.
Getting a bad situation.
Yeah, that's anyway, crazy shit.
Should we move to the infamous scene? I feel like this is kind of let's get to the Giuliani scene, which is pretty much the thing that has pushed this movie to, you know, people like Andrew's dad to watch it, I suppose.
I'm so sorry. That's horrible.
Sit. Okay.
I'm so sorry for that. Really, apologize.
Apology accepted. No problem.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you again for giving me this time. Shall we have a drink in the bedroom?
Yeah, this is interesting. I'm curious to get your guys' feel on this one. I want to hear what you would think about this whole scene, Chris.
Just to cut to the chase, I thought that after viewing it, it seemed to me far more just like a creepy old guy that was, in fact, just tucking in his pants. Like the first screenshot I saw was kind of like, ooh, that seems compromising. But seen in context, I mean, I don't like Rudy Giuliani. I think he's clearly, you know, sundowning. But I can't see something that I don't think is there. It's kind of weird and creepy, and like it also like, you know, he like pats her on the back in a kind of a funny way. But I certainly didn't see it nearly as like, you know, this caught red-handed kind of moment that as some other people did. But that's just me.
Yeah, I actually, looking back, I watched the scene again before we did this, and one of the things I noticed, at least in the scene where he's tucking his shirt, which is kind of the moment that you probably saw the screenshot of. And, you know, it's edited in a way where it's three separate shots and it kind of feels like they're showing the same thing three times. So it makes it look like his hand is moving up and down.
Oh,
and I actually, I was trying to watch it and look at it and see like, is it the same shot? Cause like it cuts three times. And I thought that was very strange. Hmm. And that actually kind of bothered me. I agree with you. I think he's a creepy dude who was expecting to potentially, you know, get some from this lady. I mean, they're drinking scotch. She was flirting. He was flirting back. I think there was on his part, you know, this sort of potential, but you know, I think you're right. It was just kind of a creepy dude. And I'm not a big fan of Rudy Giuliani, frankly, either. And I don't feel like defending the guy. I don't want to, because I don't think that really deserves defending in this scenario. But what they're kind of, what the sort of, the accusations were, I think, were a little outlandish. I just think he was just inappropriate, but I don't think it was potentially like illegal or.
I think
there was no mention of her age. I watched that too. There's no mention of her age being 15.
That's true.
You know, before the scene took place, like that was not something that happened before.
I think this scene's really interesting because I think I kind of disagree with you guys a little bit. I think this guy was rearranging his balls. I think that's what he was just like, he's like, maybe he was tucking his shirt, but he was also checking to see if the goods were any potential there. Good. Yeah. But he's a creepy bastard. But what I think is interesting about the repercussions of the scene. So currently in our political climate, there is a story that is being peddled by Rudy Giuliani around Hunter Biden and laptop bullshit stuff. What I appreciate about what this movie did, because it wasn't going to be a movie that took down the Trump presidency, but what I appreciate about this scene in particular, and considering the timing of this, couldn't have been any better. For a person of that, I get to some degree power and like relevance in terms of this presidency, all of that is super inappropriate. And I'm shocked that someone would think that, like, there's cameras in the room and you're openly drinking with a reporter. You're like flirting openly. It's like, is there no element of like, for example, we just, you know, years we've been going through the Me Too movement. There's so many like red flags that like he should know better, but this guy is a fucking idiot and a creep. And that's exposed in this scene. And so with all that said, I think, what it makes me happy about is that, for example, the stupid Hunter Biden laptop story that's being pushed, ultimately this scene discredits this motherfucker that is like trying to push a bullshit story. And so now Fox News and all those people are going to report on it, but like people that have some fucking morals can see the source, and especially the scene kind of delegitimizes him even more.
So, probably in a rough estimate, how many lives President Trump saved?
I'd say he saved a million lives. It would have been a million more had he waited that month the way the Democrats would have done.
Yeah.
But he acted swiftly. He acted before anybody. In fact, even his own advisors, some of them advised him not to do it.
Yeah.
I'm good. You're a little bit, this is good. There you go.
Yeah, it's always good. Never been in front of the camera. I've always been behind of the camera, but today something with this.
I think you're going to look pretty good.
We'll see.
You're going to look pretty good.
But it's because of you.
Well, thank you.
I really feel like Melania right now.
Well, you're doing
very
well.
About that scene, I don't know if you guys caught Sacha Baron Cohen on Colbert, but they had orchestrated that scene like very carefully, because Borat was essentially inside of like a false compartment inside of a wardrobe in women's lingerie for reasons, and he had to get into that room, into that compartment, long like before they set up the interview, because Giuliani's team, like, they, like, this is what's creepy, is they scanned the entire room, the entire like hotel room and like every crevice to make sure nobody's like tucked away to like catch Giuliani doing anything, or like just to make sure it's safe. More than anything is the intention. But then they also set up guards at the doors to make sure that nobody can come in or out. And so that's also a little bit creepy.
And also puts her in a terrible position potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could essentially go bad, which is why like Borat had to hide inside, not Borat, Sacha Baron Cohen had to hide inside the wardrobe. And he said like they had organized it so carefully, and he got in there and he was just waiting for the text from his producer to tell him what's going on in the scene. And his phone was at 3% battery. And they're like, he's like in there like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, we worked so hard to put this all together, like, and it's all hanging on 3% of like battery. But it turns out to be just enough, because like just as like things are starting to get a little bit too uncomfortable for the young actress, he like busts out and says like, she's 15. And that's when like everything kind of gets busted up and like they have to leave very quickly.
Yeah, it I mean, so like kind of what we were talking about earlier with the CPAC thing, it's interesting. Like it's Sacha Baron Cohen seems to work with security people. And like, I know on his show, he worked with people in the FBI to help him potentially get O.J. Simpson to admit that he murdered someone. So like interrogation techniques. But it's interesting that like he knew ahead of time that like there would be a security sweep and they were able to fool that security team. There's some smart people behind the scenes to get this stuff done.
It's just so wild. Like,
Chris, does that shock you that he was able to pull that off?
Yes and no. Like, it doesn't, because it seems like a lot of these people are very incompetent.
Yeah.
And we like to think of them as grown-ups when in reality they're not. But in that same vein, these are the people that work for them are very professional and do a good job. And I don't know what Rudy's security team looks like, whether it's you know, he might have ex Secret Service, he might have ex FBI, ex team guys. I don't know who he has, but a lot of those guys, at least the ones that I've worked with, are very professional and take their jobs very seriously. And the idea that they somehow just missed, you know, an actor in a false compartment in a hotel room for the president's personal lawyer. I don't know. I'm suspicious of that, but you know, I'm a cynical person. So
wait, what are you suspicious about?
It just seems unlikely to me. It seems unlikely that these kinds of guys that protect someone like Giuliani, the idea that they somehow miss this. Because it's not like
they got paid to like let it happen.
No, because they would never work again in their field. Yeah. Nobody's gonna hire the security guys who took a bribe from Sacha Baron Cohen. He's not a fucking Mossad agent. He's not a guy like he's an actor. He's a comedian. So the idea that he outsmarted a bunch of these security personnel,
But he has teams that help with that, though. But it happened. That's
the thing. Maybe. Yeah, like it's a thing. Like it happened. It's on camera. Well,
I'm just wondering. But he also was dressed up as the sound guy, right?
But underneath, he had the.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering if he came in as the sound guy as opposed to hiding. I don't know. Yeah. It just.
Yeah, he came in as a sound guy, and then he hid himself in there.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like they did a sweep of the room and they didn't catch that secret compartment.
Which is crazy.
Unlikely to me.
This is insane, yeah.
I don't know.
But anyway, let's get this closer to its meaty end. So Borat and his daughter run out into the street and he like declares that like, you know, not only does he love her, but he loves her more than a son. And
yeah.
It's like a very heartwarming scene where she's just like, oh, I can't believe it. Andrew, do you want to take it away from there?
And so that pretty much ends the, like, how the movie, like, you know, the main device of the movie of it being pranks and all that. So now we get to sort of like the scripted end of they're back in Kazakhstan meeting with the guy that kind of sent Borat on this mission. And Borat's like kind of explaining all the, you know, the budget that he lost essentially. We didn't mention the fleshlights when he meant to buy a flashlight, but ordered a fleshlight through
fleshlights.
Three fleshlights via an Amazon Echo or whatever. Anyway, so that was on the list of bad things that he did. But anyway, he's expecting that he's going to be executed. But ultimately the guy is just like, no, don't worry about it. People make mistakes. Then Tutar kind of glances over at, I don't know, some text on the wall that kind of shows Kazakhstan's plan.
Hold on. Spoiler alert. Oh, yeah.
Spoiler. Big spoiler.
I would stop now and go see the movie.
If you don't want to know how this movie ends, yeah. Fast forward until you hear us say stop.
Stop. Yeah.
this is a great Usual Suspects Kaiser Soze reveal, kind of. Which is makes it, and they even he drops the glass the same way that I can't remember the name of the actor does.
Oh right,
in Usual Suspects. It's a great little
And Kevin Spacey has a little part in the end too.
does he?
He does.
Yeah, we'll get to it. But
oh man, I don't remember that.
It's real quick, but
so basic,
huh?
Blink and you miss it.
Yeah. So basically, it's revealed that Borat was used as a way to get back at America and the world for the first movie. Borat was used to spread coronavirus around the world. Oh. So yeah, so Borat was used as a tool to spread coronavirus around the world, and it's a great show. Some flashbacks, and at the very beginning of the movie, you see a doctor that's like, "This will help with the gypsies," and he's injected with stuff. And then it cuts, you know,
gypsy tears.
Yeah. But then that's, you know, that was actually the virus that he later spreads. So you see kind of like a montage of him going around the world. Do you guys want to explain some of the places that he visited on his way to America?
I mean, he goes to China.
Yeah, he goes to Wuhan. You see him like coughing all over.
I think
he
coughs on a chicken, or he's at a wet market. He's coughing on the animals at the wet market.
Then they stop in Australia, where he comes across Forrest Gump, and is coughing all over Tom Hanks.
Poor Tom Hanks.
Which, what an incredible cameo is that? Like, I just love that. You know, if you didn't know, Tom Hanks actually and Rita Wilson got coronavirus while filming something in Australia, I think.
Yeah, really early on.
Yeah.
Very early on. Actually, in all honesty, when I heard that Tom Hanks got coronavirus, that for me was just like, oh shit, like anyone can get it.
Yeah, well, like on SNL, he hosted their first virtual or Zoom episode and he said, yeah, I'm the celebrity canary in a coal mine.
Yeah.
Didn't think it was real until I got it.
And it's, what's so funny too is that so it keeps showing flashbacks, and you see all these moments where he's like shaking people's hands and like kissing them on the cheeks, and it's such an amazing, because there's no, obviously you can't predict that coronavirus is going to happen, but like it's just amazing to me that like this movie obviously didn't have coronavirus in mind, but ultimately ends with just a great reveal of COVID being kind of like the crux or like the reason for the events that ultimately unfold, which made it perfect for our apocalyptic podcast.
There's the reason why we did this, Brian,
yeah,
for this podcast for the listeners.
Okay, and that ends I think our spoiler, so stop.
Well, actually no, slight, it's start again. Keep forwarding and then we'll stop again, but real quick, it's cool because
more spoilers.
So last spoiler, it's amazing because it shows like Kazakhstan's now like turned into this democracy that's almost better than what we're dealing with in the States, in a weird Kazakhstan way. Like they have better daily testing for the people there, and
it's troll farms.
What's that?
They have troll farms. They have a bunch of people that work and basically for Facebook just putting out bullshit online.
And instead of exporting child brides, they started exporting child grooms and their address to Mr. Kevin Spacey.
Yes, that's the Kevin Spacey part.
Oh, okay. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Collar pull.
Yeah. And that's pretty much the end.
Okay, stop.
Stop.
Jinqui.
Nice. Are we doing favorite scenes as well? Okay.
Do you have a favorite scene? I don't.
I do. I
have least favorite.
I have a favorite scene.
Disliked.
I wasn't here for this part of the conversation, but the scene where he goes to the synagogue and meets the two Jewish ladies, I think is my favorite scene. Mm-hmm. There's something really endearing about, I don't know how arranged it was. I don't know if they knew that someone was going to be coming with cameras. I have no clue, but just the idea of him showing up and then being so willing to listen and spend the time. And again, like you said earlier, Chris, you're a little cynical. I find myself a little cynical as well. So the idea that, you'd show up and have a conversation with some stranger and they'd hear your story and be willing to listen and then share some soup with you. I thought was very sweet. And that was my favorite moment, frankly, in the movie. I thought it was really wonderful and it made me smile, which was nice.
My favorite thing, I guess, is more of something that I guess was already done in the first movie, but it continues in a really great way. So Borat, he actually speaks in Hebrew throughout the whole movie. That it's
really?
Kazakh, yeah. And like the other actors who are supposed to also be Kazakh, they speak their own native languages. So I think there's like a Romanian, a Bulgarian, like they are all like speaking different languages to each other because Sacha Baron Cohen is banking on the fact that English speakers are not going to be able to tell the difference. It's kind of like a big old joke on itself.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You go, Chris.
Probably the QAnon guys, just and the lack of self-awareness when they're shown the Kazakhstan, you know, the book on women or the, you know, different things, and they're like, oh no, that's a conspiracy theory. That's not, don't be ridiculous. That's crazy talk. Just it's such a great glimpse into the brains of some people that for whatever reason they cannot see past, you know, their own craziness, and it's a huge, huge, huge problem. So anything that I think can shed light on that is important, but also it's terrifying.
One quick thing before you go, Andrew.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go back to the Fleshlight Amazon Echo moment. So I think that's masterful for one reason. I'm like, since this was released on Amazon, I'm like 99% sure that Amazon said, you got to plug the Amazon Echo at least once.
Yeah,
and he's like, okay, I'll do it, but you can't control how I do it.
Yeah.
So that's I just want to say that that's a great, 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 great use of like a product placement moment without like ruining the integrity of a movie. I think that that's honestly one of the most clever moments of the movie.
Yeah.
And Fleshlight's probably stoked.
Borat sold a lot of Fleshlights, maybe.
Yeah.
Gross.
Stone. Anyway. No.
I mean, I really like this. I think the scene that might not be my favorite scene, but the scene that I want to call out is it was the moment in the movie where I was already very excited to see this movie, but at the moment where you see Borat and Tutar, they go to like a a festival or an amusement park or whatever, and it's a really wonderful scene where you see him kind of at the beginning of the movie. He has he compares his daughter to like cattle, and you see in this scene him put his guard down and he actually starts to like love his daughter, or like kind of like the beginnings of actually showing real affection. And you see this moment, the music's also really great too, where they start like skipping together, and it's just in that moment I was just like, oh, this movie exceeded what I wanted. I felt like just my heart warmed in that moment. It was a wonderful kind of just small moment in the scene, but also kind of emphasized, and we'll get into this with reviews, but I find this movie to be better than the first one because of the heart that it has. And it ultimately comes from Tutar. And that's a great scene to kind of see the beginnings of how important she is for the rest of the film. So, yeah. So toilet paper review.
I'll start because I gotta go soon. So I give it an 8. I think it's just a really good, especially when you get to the pandemic parts, because it's so surreal to see that stuff in hindsight, because it's just like when looking at the COVID numbers from a month ago and now and seeing how much things have changed. And so seeing something like some of these events that happened, you know, 8 months ago, and now seeing kind of where we are now, it's kind of spooky in a way. And it really kind of, it's just a good way to showcase it probably to a wider audience that may not be as politically inclined, but it's also got, you know, it's funny, it's got heart. It's very meta, And again, seeing people and how they react to some stuff that you think they should react a certain way, to have them try to stay within their like reality boundaries and not make a scene is pretty fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. So 8 out of 10, Toilet Paper Rolls.
Kieran, you want to go first or?
No, Andrew, you go.
I'm going to give this, I'm going to give it a 10. Fuck it. I'm going to give it a 10. I fucking love this movie. And I think like in the context of our podcast, it's just sort of like, it's very meta and like kind of perfect. It speaks to why we're doing what we do. Or at least in terms of the time that we're in. But this movie, it's like lightning in a bottle. Like this wouldn't exist in any other time. Like this is such a good like documentation of the time that we live in, and in a comedic spin, but ultimately the comedy is used as a way to expose the moment that we are in. And there's so many things that just happen from, like, it feels like something that would be written and then filmed, but ultimately was just played in the moment based on what could be captured. And there are just so many times where I'm just like shocked that they were able to like pull off not only shocking and interesting scenes, but like a compelling story. And I think when you compare this to the first film, which I thought was amazing, especially at the time, that movie is just very shocking, while this movie has a ton of heart. It's still shocking, but it has a really lovely message of just, a father-daughter relationship, and ultimately how, you know, it's really kind of beautiful to see how that relationship just changes through the film. And so, yeah. Anyway, I think Tutar should be nominated. I'm going to say it for Best Supporting Actress. I think that will have. Also, think about the competition this year. I think that there's, I think this would be the year where Borat gets at least a Best Supporting Actress nomination.
Well, Borat won a Golden Globe.
He did. Yeah. So I think that this movie, whatever the Oscars turn out to be, I think this will probably get some love, considering how relevant this movie is in our times. So
it's I don't know what makes you think we're going to have Academy Awards this year.
Well, I mean, they at least
what said, other award shows.
They there's been other ones. They'll do some version of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought maybe the Civil War would prevent.
Oh, that's true. Well, we got to get past that, and then maybe we'll have an award show. I hope there's an award show just to make it feel somewhat normal. But anyway,
first of all, I'll say what the movie did right. I think for me, I was really impressed with just the overall logistics of doing a movie of this nature without people like knowing what's going on. I think is done really well. And it's really difficult to do. Like I think that they did that really well. I think the editing is great. I think that the overall flow of the script, like the parts that were scripted, I thought were done in a way that made sense. I just personally didn't find it as shocking, I guess. Like the scene, like the setups and the punchlines, like, I could see them coming a mile, like it's racist people being racist, and misogynist people being misogynist, people being uncomfortable with the female form. Like, it's like, okay, like I kind of knew that was happening. Like, I think that the most shocking scenes for me were the most heartwarming, just seeing this woman who was like not afraid to stand up and tell this other woman like, hey, you're worth more than you think. Having these two Jewish old ladies having the courage to stand up to this clearly very backwards man. Those two scenes, I think, for me were the most compelling because they did show like something that like we haven't seen in a while. Whereas the other things, I feel like when you're like doom scrolling, there's like so many articles of just people being shitty that it was so nice to finally see a representation of people being awesome and being nice. Admittedly, I'm not Sacha Baron Cohen's intended audience. Some people do need to like see that people can be this terrible. And so that's what keeps me from giving it a lower rating. So I'll give it 4 toilet paper rolls.
Oof. Okay. Jeff?
I'm coming. I too am giving this 4 toilet paper rolls. It's funny that Cammy mentioned the editing. I didn't like the editing. I felt it was very manipulative, this more so than the previous film. But again, I haven't seen the previous film in a while. And I was, you know, I hadn't been to film school at that point too. So maybe I was less aware, but it just felt like some of the scenes were very, I just felt like they were more manipulated. They felt less genuine.